Christian burial. I didn't know of a better title for tonight's lesson. So we'll talk about Christian burial. What is a Christian burial? Remember these, it's usually an old Western where somebody dies on the wagon train and somebody has to say a few words and they usually quote something from the 23rd Psalm and take a couple pieces of wood and make a cross and pound it in the ground and consider that Christian burial. But when you look at what the scriptures say, what the Bible says, there aren't any instructions anywhere in the Old or the New Testament as far as what you do with the human body once the spirit has passed from that body, which to me is interesting. Have you ever thought about when Cain killed Abel? Abel was just, he was dead, he was gone. Now, I don't know what Cain did, probably went off in a huff. Mom and dad showed up, somebody, and said, well, what are we going to do now? What do we do with this body? And, of course, one more verse doesn't say, does it? Have no idea what they did. From the earliest records in the scriptures, what we see is that people were buried, but there aren't any instructions for that. What we do not see is that there is any spiritual significance that God puts on what we do with a body once the spirit's gone. You got somebody dead, and what they used to do is they buried him, but they didn't bury him the way we bury. Because how do we bury today? Well, you buy a plot of land and you go out with a backhoe and you dig a hole. You put that body in a very nice box. Then you put that box in a very large vault. Then you put that vault in that hole. Then you cover up both boxes, put dirt on top. Well, that's not how they did it in Abraham's day. They did it a little differently. But I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but just like there aren't any instructions for burial, there aren't any instructions for how to perform a wedding ceremony. Now, there's a lot in the Bible about how to be married, how to be a husband, how to be a wife, how to be a mom, how to be a dad, but there aren't any instructions on what to do about a wedding. And in my mind, I'm thinking both of these facts, the fact that there's no instructions for what to do with a body, there's no instructions for what to do with a wedding. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to really equate these two, burial of a dead body and a wedding. But when you think about it, these are events that are very important spiritually, but it's as if God, and maybe he did, left silence there so that in every culture we could bury folks or dispose of the body with some kind of dignity, and we could marry couples however it fit into the culture, and there not be any religious restraints on how those things are done. For example, when you read about, I always think about this when it comes to weddings especially, when Jacob thought he was marrying Rachel, who was he actually marrying? Unbeknownst to him, I don't know how this happens, but what the text says is the next day he woke up and it was Leah. Okay. Whatever they did, that established a wedding. They were actually married. He didn't wake up and say, wait a minute, this isn't the girl that I was choosing, so I'm not married to her. No, they were married. Whatever they did, they went through that process and they were married. But for a funeral, where would you look to in the Bible as far as how to conduct a funeral? Well, there isn't one. 66 letters, tomes, you might say, writings, and there is no instruction on how to do a funeral. To me, that's the genius of God. He didn't nail us down to any particular way of doing things. It was just kind of left up to us in the culture. And so for weddings and funerals, we have the freedom to do it. We simply do it within the parameters of godliness and dignity and the respect that both occasions observe or deserve. So we've got burials. And if you want to look at Genesis chapter 23, this is what happened when Sarah died. So Sarah lived 127 years, and these were the years of the life of Sarah. Sarah died in Kiriath, that is in Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Abraham rose from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, I'm a stranger and a sojourner among you. Give me a burial site among you that I may bury my dead out of my sight. So that was the idea. My wife, my beloved wife Sarah, is dead. I want to bury her out of my sight. Why do you think that would be in his frame of mind? Without getting into the gory details, we know what happens once someone dies. And so he wanted to dignify her memory by burying her out of her sight. I'm sure that's what was going through his mind. And so he's in a strange country, strange land. He goes to the sons of Heth, and he says, I'd like to have the field of Machpelah. That's what it gets down to there a little farther on down. Verse 9, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, which is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. I also think it's very humorous the way this conversations take place. Because I want to pay the full price for this. And then the guy says, oh, no, I'm going to give you that field. I don't want you to pay me for it. He says, no, I want to pay you the full price. And no, I want to give it to you. I mean, what's 400 shekels to me anyway? And so it's like that's a sneaky way of saying what the field is worth. And so Abraham measured out 400 shekels and bought the field. But then it says down in verse 19, after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field at Machpelah, facing Mamre, that is in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that's in it were deeded over to Abraham for a burial site by the sons of Heth. And there are no more details. It doesn't tell us if he simply laid her body in this cave or if her body was wrapped up or put in any kind of a container of any kind. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say if they went into the cave and dug a hole inside the cave and put her in the hole and then covered her over with dirt. It's kind of like the way we do it. Didn't say any of that. It just says he bought this cave and somehow, some way, laid his beloved wife's body in that cave. And that was her burial place. Doesn't even say if they sealed up the cave. We probably have a lot of images in our mind when we read this of how that took place, but we don't know. Then you get to chapter 25. And in chapter 25, Abraham dies. And then in verse 9 of chapter 25, it says, then his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, facing Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. So, however she was placed in there, now Abraham is probably placed in there. And then you get to chapter 49 of Genesis, and this is what we read here. Chapter 49 and verse 29. And this is Jacob now talking to his boys. He charged them and said to them, I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. There they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah. There they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah. And there I buried Leah, the field and the cave that's in it, purchased from the sons of Heth. So he died and he was, as it is put here in the text, he was gathered to his people. What's that mean, gathered to his people? That means his spirit was still alive. And wherever his people went, his spirit went there. That was their nice way of saying he went to be with the rest of the folks who've passed on from this world. He died. But he didn't simply die. His spirit went somewhere, and that's how it's reflected in Scripture. But the body was still here. And so that body, as he requested, was going to be buried in that same cave. So how many caves are there? Is that what we have to do now? You got to find a cave somewhere to lay your loved ones in there. And then when you die, have enough space in that cave for you to be in there. I'm not trying to mock this or make fun of it. I'm just saying that's how Abraham did it. But there's nothing in the text, there's nothing in the Scriptures anywhere that says this is how all godly people are supposed to dispose of their dead. It simply tells us this is the way it was there. And so we see this. And then in chapter 50 of Genesis, Joseph fell on his father's face because he just died, gathered to his father's. He wept over him and kissed him, and Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. Now 40 days were required for it, for such is the period required for embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days. So isn't that interesting? This is another little turn, another little twist. Instead of simply laying his body to rest, he was actually embalmed. And I don't know if you've studied anything about the Egyptian practice of embalming, but it was a pretty detailed process of removal of certain organs and those kinds of things. And I don't know how much of this was done, but however it was done, there was some kind of an embalming process effected on Jacob's body. And this is not presented in any way to be a bad thing. It's just what they did. This is what Joseph did. And it's God decided, let's put that in the book. This is what happened. Let's tell everybody. And it's not told in any way, shape, or form to say this is what you ought to do or this is a bad thing to do. This is just history. And we're reading about this because we're considering, what do you do when someone dies? And the big question today on a lot of folks' mind, including myself, is what about creation? Creation. That's another lesson. We'll talk about that later. What about cremation? The only example that we've got of cremation in the scriptures is when Saul and his sons were killed in battle on Mount Gilboa. And this is 1 Samuel chapter 31. They were killed in battle. And it says the Philistines returned, took the bodies, and they, in verse 9, they cut off Saul's head, stripped off his weapons, and sent them throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the good news to the house of their idols and to the people. They put his weapons in the temple of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. Could you imagine being a tourist? Oh, where are we going? Oh, let's swing by Bethshan here, and you're coming up to town, and man, there's a guy's body. Oh, who's that? Oh, that's Saul. He's one of our enemy kings. We just killed him, cut off his head, fastened his body to the wall. Again, I'm not making light. I'm saying this is a very different thing than what we experience in our Western culture. This is what the Philistines did. So Saul's body was fastened to the wall of the city of Bethshan. Verse 11. When the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose and walked all night and took the body of Saul and the body of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. And they came to Jabesh and they burned them there. They took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Now, why the people of Jabesh Gilead? It was the city of Jabesh Gilead that was earlier besieged, and the besiegers said, we'll let you guys go free if we get to put out the right eye of every man. And, well, what are we going to do? Well, they sent an emissary to Saul, and Saul got his troops together and came and delivered the city of Jabesh Gilead from their enemies. And now they are repaying the favor after Saul's death. They've gone back and they've taken his body and the body of his sons down from the wall of Bethshan, and they burned them. I don't know of any other passage in Scripture that talks about people burning a body, but this time they burned those bodies, and what was left that did not burn were some of the bones, and they buried those bones, and David heard about this. 2 Samuel chapter 2. David is made king. It says in 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 4, then the men of Judah came and anointed David king over the house of Judah, and they told David, saying, it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul. David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said to them, may you be blessed of the Lord because you have shown this kindness to Saul, your Lord, and have buried him. So David knows what these guys have done. They took the bodies of Saul and his sons down and they burned them first. And then what was left after the burning, they buried him. And that's pretty much what we do, in a sense. I mean, It's not a pleasant thing to talk about, but if you want to go down and ask the guys at the funeral home down the street here what happens when they cremate somebody, well, not everything gets burned up. There are large parts of bone that are left. And so that has to be disposed of as well in some way, shape, or form. And these guys did that with as much honor and dignity as they could muster because they had honor and dignity in their hearts for Saul, for what he had done for them. David, hearing this, instead of chastising them or criticizing them about burning the bodies, he honors them because they have, in this way, honored Saul and his sons. And so I got to wonder to myself, why would God put this information in here if he didn't want in some way for us to read it and get an idea that, okay, cremation's not a horrible thing. If you get burned up in a fire, it's no different than being buried in a landslide. Your body is going to go back to the dust. That's what we'll read in a little bit. You probably already know that. But I think it's significant that these things are in the scriptures so we can read them and come to some conclusions about what to do with a human body once we have that burden to bear, that decision to make. Ossuaries. How many of you know what an ossuary is? Any hands? You ever been to the zoo, seen an ossuary out there running around? No, it's not an ossuary. That's an ossuary is a chest, a box, a building, a well, or a site made to serve as the final resting place of human skeletal remains. What's another word for human skeletal remains? Bones. It's a place where you put bones. That's what an ossuary is. Now, a sarcophagus, if you've heard of a sarcophagus, I'm sure you've heard of a sarcophagus, comes from the Greek word sarcophagos. Hey, how about that? Which means flesh consuming. Bodies were placed in a sarcophagus until only the bones were left, and then the bones were moved to an ossuary. Why would they do this? Why would this be a practice? Here in America, we have got land like crazy. Not every place in the world has land like crazy. And if you go to the Middle East, most of the land you have is hard, and it's difficult to dig. Remember when Jesus was buried? Where was he buried? He was in a tomb that Joseph of Arimathea had hewn out. Joseph of Arimathea was a rich man. He could afford to hire some guys to cut out a tomb in rock. And that's what he did. They cut out this tomb, and that's where Jesus was buried. Well, not everybody can do that. And not everybody can dig into rock-hard ground. But in this case, people were making boxes. You put the body of your loved one in there. After a certain amount of time, the only thing that would be left would be the bones. You open that the casket up, and you take out the bones. And where do you put the bones? You put them in an ossuary. You've got another box that's smaller, so you take the bones out of the sarcophagus and you put them in the ossuary. The Jews have been doing this since before the coming of Christ. As a matter of fact, is that the next picture? There we are. That's Jerusalem. This is a view. I don't know if you can see in the background. What's in the background is Temple Mount. And this is a view from the Mount of Olives. And what you're looking at there, all those little squares, those cube-looking things, that's a cemetery. It's a Jewish cemetery. And this is a collection, if I understand properly, of sarcophagi and ossuaries. They put the bodies in the sarcophagi until they decompose, the soft tissues decompose, and then they move the bones to an ossuary because this saves space. You don't have to have huge plots of land to bury your loved ones. You just need a few boxes. You let them go back to the dust, and once they've gone to dust, you collect the bones, put them in an ossuary, and this is the way it's been done for thousands of years. So that's in Jerusalem. There are a couple of different ossuaries, just to give you an idea of what people would build and what they would do. And by the way, as you can understand, these are for people who have some financial means. Not everybody could afford to have boxes made like these. And I don't know when the last time is you had to lay a loved one to rest, but have you noticed how expensive funerals have gotten? Nothing I'm about to say should reflect on anyone who is an embalmer or an undertaker, but when you think about the industry of laying people to rest, you can see how things would go naturally with human nature. When you're watching a Western, what were people buried in Westerns, if the Westerns are telling the truth? A pine box, the proverbial pine box. You get some pine boards, and you can cut them if you want into that kind of a neat shape, you know, like we see in the Dracula movies. I know that's just where you see them. It kind of comes up like this from the bottom, and then it goes in like that at the top, because that's the way our bodies. We kind of have that figure for your shoulders, and then down, slimmer down at your hips. That's just a pine box. You take the body, you put them in some nice clothes. If you've got nice clothes for them, you put them in that pine box, and then you dig a hole, and you put that pine box with the body in it in the hole. That's the way it used to be done, not just in Westerns, but in actual life. Where I grew up in southern West Virginia, this was how people were buried many years ago, and there are cemeteries all over the place because, as it used to be, you'd decide this is where you're going to live, and while you're living there, someone would die. You go up on the hill behind the house, and you clear out some trees, clear out some land, and you start digging graves, and that's where you put your loved ones. Well, I used to go up there and mow because there were a couple different cemeteries of local families behind our house, my own family, for one. And you'd notice some of the older graves would be sunk in, and there was a place where you would go when you would get dirt. Well, why are those graves sunk in? Well, because pine boxes don't last very long in the ground. So you go get some dirt and you fill in that grave so that it's even with the rest of the ground. That used to be a very common practice. We don't do that anymore because our burial practices have changed. But you think about that pine box. Somebody comes in and says, well, you know, that's just plain old pine box. What can I do? Can I get something better? Oh, yeah, we can get something better. We get some nice material and put inside that pine box. Well, does that pine box leak? Yeah, it's just a pine box. Well, can you make one that doesn't leak? And you can see how the industry would begin to create more and more and fancy caskets and better caskets. And I don't know about you, but you go down to the funeral home and they show you the base model casket. Well, what do you feel like looking at the base model casket? You're going to put your loved one in the base model casket? Really? We got one over $500 more. We'll get you this. And again, I'm not casting aspersions, but I'm just saying it's a business, it's an industry. And sometimes things develop in a way that you don't really plan on them developing, and the wrong things get emphasized, because no matter what you do with that body, what is going to happen to it? It's going to go back to dust. It's going to go back to dust. That's what Solomon said. Spirit returns to God who gave it, the body returns to the dust of the earth. And that's what God used to make the first man anyway. He took dust, formed a man, breathed in his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. So when we die, one way or the other, we're going to go back to dust. These are sarcophagi and ossuaries. And by the way, there's one, got a picture of one with the bones still in it. I don't know why, but I couldn't help think of the Three Bears when I saw this. The bones are still there. Somebody remembers the story, but that's kind of gross and morbid looking, but that's what we're looking at when we're looking at death. From the physical perspective, where's the spirit of this individual? Let's just imagine that this was a godly individual, one who had a right relationship with God. Where is the spirit of the individual whose bones we're looking at right now? With God in glory, in one way, shape, or another. They are asleep in Christ, asleep in God, and we're looking at their bones, but that will have nothing to do with their true state if they have died in a good relationship with the Lord. There's another view of that hillside, that cemetery. Jesus said this. By the way, as you're looking at this picture, remember what Jesus said in Matthew 23? As a matter of fact, I might even have it here. Yeah, there it is. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites. You're like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside They're full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to people, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So that might have been the view, some of the view that Jesus had. Perhaps he was in the temple area looking across to the Mount of Olives, because that's where the cemetery is, and this cemetery has been there for a long time. Maybe Jesus was looking at some of these, and these were in the view of other people, and because he was talking about whitewashed tombs. That's what these are. Whether they are the sarcophagi or the ossuaries, full of dead men's bones. And he didn't say anything approving or disapproving of this. This is just the way that they did it. And by the way, when you read about the burial of Jesus, I don't know if I put this in the PowerPoint, but in John chapter 19, when John is recording how Jesus was laid to rest, and of course he didn't stay in the tomb, but still we're looking at the burial practices. This is John 19, verse 38. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate granted permission. So he came and took away his body. Nicodemus, who had first come to him by night, also came, bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes. We sing the song, Aloes Have a Part. That's what we're talking about here. How heavy? How much? About 100 pounds. That's a lot of myrrh and aloes. But that's what Nicodemus came to bring for the preparation of Jesus' body. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen wrappings with the spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now there's a phrase right there, the burial custom of the Jews. It doesn't say the burial custom of God, or biblically, doing a biblical burial, or as God told them, just as this was their custom. They had the way to do it, and this is the way they did it. Of course, Jesus was only going to need it for a little while, but these guys, I don't think, were thinking in those terms. They were preparing his body for a permanent burial. Do you remember who else was coming to the tomb on the first day of the week? It was the women. Why were they coming to the tomb? They had more things to try to offer preparation for the body of Christ. So this is how it was done, but we're not being told this as if to say this is what all Christians are supposed to do. Go get 100 pounds of myrrh and aloes. Get some linen cloth. Wrap your loved ones in linen with 100 pounds of this. That's not why this is in here. We're just being told the facts. How we do it in each case is left up to us. This is what Ecclesiastes says, Solomon. He says, remember your creator before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. The pitcher by the spring is shattered and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. These are all poetic images of death when the spirit leaves the body. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. And the dust returning to the earth is what we're considering tonight. That is going to happen. Where are the remains of Abraham today? We read about him being buried in the cave of Machpelah with his loved ones. His whole family was in there. Where are their bones? Where are their remains? Who has a clue? Is there anything that remains of any of those old patriarchs and matriarchs of those ancient times? I don't think so. Their bodies have returned to the dust. Their spirits, however, are with the Lord. And so the focus is on the spiritual, once again, rather than the physical. If you look at 1 Corinthians 15, we'll close with this. You know what that means when I say we'll close with this. Only about 20 more minutes. Bottom line of this was, I wanted us to have some perspective on the idea of burial, that God doesn't say one way or the other. If you want to use cremation as a means of disposing of your body or the body of a loved one, I don't see anything in the scriptures that would be an objection to that. If you want to bury folks, of course, we know burial, quote unquote, is what they did in the Bible. But their burials are very different than our burials today, as we've already talked about. Unless you're going to go get a cave and just lay your loved one in there, which you'll have to check on state laws. I don't know if they even allow you to do that. We don't do things exactly the way they did it in those days. But isn't it great that God doesn't say you have to? Whatever works, whatever is proper for the situation. So in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul is writing to the church at Corinth about the resurrection. And he says this in verse 42. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown a perishable body. It is raised an imperishable body. That word I want you to focus on is perishable. What kind of a body are you living in right now? A perishable body. It is designed to go away. It is organic. That means when you die, this body will simply return to its natural state, which is dust. Dust. From dust we came, to dust we will return. That's what these bodies are. But the spirit you have in you is eternal. It will last forever, and that's what he's contrasting here. You'll see that same imagery throughout his discussion of the resurrection. Look at verse 43. It is sown in dishonor. Dishonor. Think about, see, I don't want to get morbid, but just think about a dead body. It's only going to get worse. It's going to corrupt because of the way things are in this world. It's going to decompose. I believe that's why Abraham said, I need a place to bury my wife out of my sight. He didn't want to see that, I think, is what was going on in his mind, and we don't want to see that either. Just to throw a little humor in this, have you seen the show Oklahoma? Y'all are good Okies. You should see the show Oklahoma. If you haven't, get on YouTube and pull up this particular song about poor Judd is dead. Because Curly was fantasizing in song about the death of Judd, because Judd was the bad guy. And he's singing this song to Judd and trying to make Judd feel good about himself. How wonderful people are going to feel. How sorry they're going to be when he dies. Kind of trying to talk him into hanging himself is what he's doing. And he says, look there, he looks great laying in that box. And I don't remember exactly how the song went. But he said, it's summer and we're running out of ice. And that's the idea. And everybody who hears that knows, okay, we get it. We get it. Got to get this guy in the ground pretty soon. And that's because the body is perishable. It's sown in dishonor. And that dishonor is the corruption that is of this world, I think. But it's going to be raised in glory. It's sown in weakness, raised in power. It's sown in natural body. Its natural state is dust. It is raised a spiritual body. But if there's a natural body, there's also a spiritual body. And he comes back to this idea of the perishable in verse 52. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound and the dead will be raised imperishable and we will be changed. For this perishable must put on imperishable and this mortal must put on immortality. But when this perishable will have put on the imperishable and this mortal will have put on immortality, then will come about the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Is God in any way limited by the condition of your body 4,000 years after you're dead? And the answer is no. He wants to raise you from the dead. He will raise you from the dead. And you cannot prevent your body from going to corruption. It is perishable. When you die, it's going to go back to the dust. So whether it goes back to the dust by being put in a simple pine box and buried in the dirt, or being embalmed as we do it today, pumping all kinds of chemicals into the body, and then putting that body in a very nicely put together box, and putting that box in a bigger box, it's still going to go to corruption. We know that. We understand that. We don't like to think about that. That's why salvation is great, because we've got something to look forward to beyond what this body is coming to. If you're burned up, if you fall overboard on your next cruise and sharks get you, and you wind up by those sharks scattered out all over the ocean somewhere, in all the little shark bathrooms, wherever they might go, God is not challenged by that. He will raise you from the dead. It doesn't matter. So the bottom line is, whatever you'd like to do with respect to God when you die, I think it's going to be okay. If there's something different that I am missing, I hope the good Lord shows it to me. And if you know of it, you can show it to me. But as far as I know, you can be buried in the dirt. You can be put in a cave. You can be cremated in fire. But the main thing is, what about your soul? Don't put so much emphasis on the body. Put the emphasis where God puts it, on your soul, on your spirit. That's what's going to spend eternity somewhere. And I even use that phrase, spend eternity. You're not going to spend eternity. You only spend things that go away. Eternity is a different thing than time. We can spend time, but you can't spend eternity. You'll just be there. As God is, the I am, you will be. With that, if you have any needs tonight, as we make the invitation, come forward and let us know. Bobby, will you stand with us and sing the invitation? Well, you better make a stand and sing the song. Let's stand and sing.